Welcome back, everyone, to a slightly delayed edition of the Cantina, looking at this week's chapter 12 of The Mandalorian. If you've been with us so far, you've seen that we've been going for the last 5 weeks. Initially just going through season one, then our predictions for season two, and then so far we've covered each episode after it's aired each week, and we're now on to the fourth episode of season two, which is chapter 12 and was called The Siege. As always, my co-host on the Cantina, Kel Malone, is here. Hi, Kel.
Hey, how's it going, Cam?
Not too bad at all, not too bad at all. So let's just get right into it. Chapter 12, The Siege. Before we kind of get into the kind of plot that goes along and everything, what was your thoughts just overall?
At first I want to say, like, I called it. Like, last week I said they were going to go,
fix the ship.
Figured he was going to go fix the ship at Navarro because he knows people there that he believes that he can trust. Those people may not be able to trust their people, but Mando went there, and I said we were gonna get a Cara Dune Greef Karga episode. I think 100%.
That scene was pretty obvious, but you know, to be fair, not to give you too much credit, but you did call the whole, which I agreed with you to be fair, but you know, that they would go back and repair the ship, you know, at Navarro. That's why we would get to Navarro before he heads to his next destination, which is presumably to find Ahsoka Tano, given that's... Oh, there was a little beep come up on the system there.
Just carry on.
Something went wrong.
Fuck it.
So, overall, enjoy the episode, Kel?
Yeah. Oh, overall, like, there's a lot of really cool little lore and Easter eggs throughout this. I only wrote down a few because God knows there's more, but I think this is one of the best Mandalorian episodes we've had. I don't know if it's the best because the season cap
for me, that's still the best so far, but...
that was badass. But, you know, but this was...
I just felt like that extra Waititi touch. But, it was really good. And do you know what I was impressed with?
What's that?
The direction.
Yes, Carl Weathers.
I just didn't know what to expect from Carl Weathers because I haven't got a lot of experience with anything he's directed before.
Yeah,
seen him in a million films, don't get me wrong, as an actor. But, and I think you weren't that keen on Weathers' performance as Karga in season one, it would be fair to say, remembering back to kind of talking a little bit through that, weren't you not? You were like a bit,
deliveries just came off as if he was like still stuck in the 80s camp, you know, like the over delivery of some lines. He was definitely better later in this season, and definitely much better this episode.
I thought he was the best character in the show this episode. I just thought Greef Karga was amazing. I thought Weathers did it, and just seemed to be more relaxed into the role now. You know, maybe now that whole duplicitous thing's gone, you know, and he's kind of playing a more straightforward, you know, character. You know, I really liked him, and I thought the banter between the three of them, because what I would say about this episode is there wasn't that much Mando and the child in this episode. There was a lot of good scenes with them, don't get me wrong, but it felt like the episode was really more focused on the other three. And that Mando and the child were like the secondary characters, and I thought the three of them, Gina Carano as obviously Cara Dune, Carl Weathers as Greef Karga, I don't know the guy's name, but the guy that's playing the Mithril, I just thought the three of them worked really, really well together as a kind of trio throughout that episode. Mm-hmm. And I loved the banter, like the constant sort of it was like between Beef Cargo and the Mithril, it was almost like, shut your hole, fool!
Yeah,
and... get it done or I'll fucking slap you in the back of the head. Do you want another 20 years in your sentence? I'll take 30 years off you, I'll take 100 years off you, do you know what I mean, if you do this. I just thought that was really, really well done.
The fact that you take 100 years off their sentence and their... that they owe so much time that 100 years they're like, yeah, buddy, I'll do it. Hell yeah.
Yeah, 100 yeah. years, Jesus.
I will say,
who knows how long Mithril's lived, but it must be for a very long time. I would imagine Greef Karga would not live as long. He'd be a long dead.
I will say this about Weathers' direction. And that is, he had a really, I think, good eye for close-ups and getting good action details in close-ups, especially like during the dog fight, the close-ups on the baby and... close-ups on
yeah, like showing his reaction and basically going
yeah
like,
yeah and I know was some done. Of that is obviously in the script as a stage direction, you know, we cut to baby,
of course, but it's still how you it's still how you execute it,
exactly there's nothing in this world that you can take away from Carl Weathers in what I've seen others on the internet say, direct one of, if not some people saying the best Mando episode. But yeah, was thoroughly
it's definitely
impressed.
Up there. It's definitely up there, and you know, again, just throw out to thought Weathers did an amazing job in front of the camera and behind the camera this week. One of my favorite scenes that's up there with the Stormtroopers sort of shooting failing to shoot in the final episode of last season. One of my favourite scenes in this one, which we'll get to in a minute, was the one with the child, so in the school, and I just thought that was so well put together, that whole shot, and it just kind of, I think that's maybe the cutest we've ever seen the child as well, do you know what I mean, during that period. So anyway, like let's get into the actual detail. So we begin the episode as the previous one finished. They're on the ship, they're in space, and the ship is not in a good way. So Mando attempts to do some repairs and kind of conscript the child into helping him out by climbing in a few holes that Mando can't get to.
Mon Cal were essential in the defeat of the Empire with their engineering and ingenuity skills. So, I will say that was slightly upsetting seeing a Mon Cal do such a shitty patch job.
That's almost a reverse racism thing. It's like, because it's generalizing people by the species they are. So, this person is, you know, this person's Chinese, so should be good at mechanics. Doesn't make sense to me. Do you know what I mean? Any more than this person's white, so therefore they're bad at this or that, you know. Jumping at basketball, maybe I'll give you.
Okay. Hey, in a.
Do you know what I mean?
A
so
universe
I think
of
in a livable,
single
universe. He's just shit. He's a rip-off merchant.
In a universe of single climate planets. Okay, Cam. Sure.
But you know what? That's just the way I look at things and think, well, I don't expect one race to be this, and then
there. I figured he was a good engineer because he got it going, but it was the stuff that he had
when he wants to be.
Yeah.
But he really just wasn't giving a fuck, and he's like, I can rip this guy to shreds. What's he going to do? Do you know what I mean? There you go. It's flyable. I'll have your 1,000 credits. See you later. You can get it fixed somewhere else at a more repeatable place.
You're even being more mean than I was. I thought he did what he could with what he had. You know?
I get the feeling he did a half-assed job. You know what I mean? Like, how many Mando times have you went a to bit a mechanic and you come out and you're like that? Yeah, bastard. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's just humans. Do you know what I mean? So I can imagine. And this place was basically like the armpit of the world, wasn't it? You know what I mean? So pick a dodgy place on Earth, crappy. And that's where that planet was. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, you don't necessarily expect top quality. Anyway, that's a hell of a lot of time to spend on repairs of a starship. So, Yoda, obviously, not Yoda, because he's not child. Yoda. Baby Yoda, the child, is not doing a very good job of fixing things. I mean, to be fair, we've not even really been shown that he understands what Mando's actually saying to him, and he's going like, no, don't put those two wires together.
Yeah.
He's just like,
we get a baby group moment. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 kind of call out.
But even then, you kind of know that Baby Groot can understand, because you've built that history. He just can't communicate back well, but we genuinely don't know whether, you know, Mando's speaking to Baby Yoda and it's just like, blah, 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 no, blah, 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 blah.
If you've noticed this, but as, like you said, Mando is speaking to the child. The child's babbling and like vocalizations are getting more numerous and more often. And as this season goes on, I wouldn't be surprised if we had a couple of words by the end of the season.
I think that would be a cute way to show his development, is just, you know, he says something, you know, because, you know, kids learn from, you know, the speech from the parents. That's why kids just learn how to speak, in our situation anyway, English and at the home, because, you know, they hear their parents and their siblings and people like that say it all the time. And given that practically everyone in the Star Wars universe speaks English, although it's basic for them, but, you know, and just translated for us, shall we say, but it does make sense that he would start to pick up some basic words. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I loved that little opening bit. Even just the, you know, as you say, I think there was definitely, you know, some Baby Groot references in there, and I'm okay with that, to be honest.
Easy.
So Mando, as you said, he would decides, this isn't going to work. We can't sort of drag our arse all the way to meet this Jedi. I'm worried we don't get there, so I'm going to make a shorter hop back to Navarro and get some repairs done on the ship. So, Razor Crest arrives, the door won't open properly, which I thought was quite a funny effect as well. And of course, Greef Karga and Cara Dune are there to meet him. But prior to that, we also get a little kind of, I don't know, almost like a James Bond, like what just happened before, with Cara Dune doing her martial bit. I have one issue with that section, but I'm not going to say anything until I've asked you what you thought of the little Cara Dune scene prior to Mando arriving.
I actually liked it for the most part. I mentioned how to my wife how it's nice to have a fighter, a trained fighter, or to do fight scenes.
Fight scenes.
And then I wondered if, since she's a trained fighter, if they ever recruit not just for her, but even like Dave Bautista, other professional fighters and pro wrestlers, if they ever recruit local wrestlers, people that know how to take falls, to do fights, to take hits,
like extra scenes, and shit like that.
I wonder if that
would be a potential path for someone who did, like, let's say wrestling, you know, because it basically is stunt work, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They have to take the hits, but it's controlled, it's planned, it's made as safe as it possibly can be, but accidents still happen.
Yeah.
And that's stunt work. So I think it's a very natural thing from one into the other. And you can't all be as famous as Dave Bautista, you know, Sasha Banks, etc. So I would imagine that there is, The Rock even more so. But But, you know, I would imagine there maybe is, you know, for the people that have had their time in WWE or whatever it is, that it could be a good avenue to move in. However, it would depend which one pays more money as well, because that period when you're physically able to do that shit is a finite period of time, let's face it. You know, I'm 42 now. What I could do in my early 30s, I can't do now. Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's impossible. I get sore backs, I get this and I get that, you know, and I still play some sports, but nowhere near to the level that I don't at the moment because there's a pandemic on, but it's nowhere near the level I used to be able to be now when if like maybe somebody brings their son with them to the football, like when I'm playing football, and there's like some 20-something kid, I'm quite fast, so everybody, oh, you mark the fast one, Campbell. You're fast. You mark the fast one, and I just feel like I just can't do it anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just I'm absolutely buggered.
Definitely.
And I think there must be an element of that, in most, like if you call it a sports career, you would imagine with stunts and things like that. Although it's a little bit more controlled, you have a period where your kind of body's getting a bit too old for it now, and you need to kind of step behind and go to the kind of choreography and management side of things. So that would be my only thing about that. I would wonder whether wrestlers choose, well, I'll spend the majority of my physical career until I'm not able in the WWE or wrestling or whatever, and then there's maybe not a chance to kind of move elsewhere after that. Anyway,
what was my the thing issue that you don't like?
Is simply that if she is a marshal and she's going into where she knows these people are and they've all got guns, that she goes in without a gun. I don't
get it. Yeah, okay. That was dumb.
If you wanted to show a fight scene, have her start with a gun. Somebody like grabs her from behind, the gun gets dropped on the floor, so she has to resort to physical contact, you know, combat, sorry, because her gun is away from her at that point. But I don't get why she would go in to a situation. I mean, realistically, she should never have won that, because they should all just started blasting away and she was a fucking goner, sorry.
Yeah.
But I just don't get that. I would rather it was a kinetic situation that happened during the fight, like she maybe takes a couple out, you know, then she gets wrestled, you know, she loses a gun, and then you see a bit of her fighting after that. That would have made more sense to me. So possibly one of my only few criticisms of the movie, but it just kind of, it jumped out to me more the second time I'd watched it rather than the first time. I just didn't notice, and then the second time I was like, oh, she doesn't actually have a gun when she's going in there. She's walking in the corridor just on her own, which doesn't make much sense to me.
Do you think that was a writing mistake, or was that an attempt at here comes the badass Marshall like type thing?
I don't know. I'm not going to say one or t'other, because I've genuinely no idea which one it is. I think it's a mistake whatever way you look at it, but it's a small one, and I don't want to harp on about it too much, because it's small scene, and it was still a good action scene despite that. It just kind of takes me out a little bit at the start. When I think,
they couldn't remember.
You must have a blaster.
I was going to say they couldn't they filmed part of the scene, and then the COVID shit hit, and they couldn't remember what they were doing, and so the next time they filmed, there was no weapon. That's what happened.
That's your kind of headcanon, is it? That's how you explain it. Even though 98% of The Mandalorian was filmed before the pandemic even hit.
It's bullshit. Anyway.
Okay. So we obviously, Greef Karga and Kara are there to meet Mando. He needs repairs done in the Sherpa. There's a little bit of patter about, is my credit good here? Yeah, it's good. Greef Karga, I thought, was quite good the way he was like straight to the child. Hey, little one, and you're like, you're taking care of each other and all that sort of stuff. Because obviously the child did save his life, which is what kind of turned the guy around a little bit in season one. So he definitely has some affection for that kid at the end of the day. I thought that was quite good. They kind of walk off. They're telling Mando about the state of Navarro now, if you like. Since he's left, it's a much better place. And we see evidence of that, because Greef insists on kind of dropping the child off at a little school. While they go and talk business, etc. And Mando's like, hey, I'm not too sure about this, but I think clearly sees actually this is a pretty safe space. Do you know what I mean? This is not the same Navarro
in
I was in before.
In this school, the protocol droid mentions the Hydian way, which is a major hyperspace route, you know, clear and safe hyperspace transportation lane. And
is that from the EU books?
Came straight from the EU books over into now canon.
Well, I mean, as
it may have been canon before, but now
I don't know. Yeah, but you know, sometimes they just seem to make strange decisions on what's canon and what's not. But they certainly do bring a lot of the EU stuff back. We've seen a lot of that already, and I think we've seen even more of that in this episode as well, as we get into things later on.
So
we talked about it earlier on. I really loved the Yoda scene in the school where, you know, the teacher's teaching and Yoda's only interest is in the guy that's sitting eating like maybe blue Oreo cookies, it looks like. And, you know, Yoda's just staring at him with those big eyes, and you kind of, they linger on it just enough time to make it almost pathetic. And the little boy turns around and says, "No, you're not getting any." And, you know, and the child's like, "Whoa," you know what I mean? And then just brings it over in the Force. The little boy turns back, and there's the child sitting, num, 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 munching on some cookies. You know what I mean? I just thought that was such a well-shot scene.
It was.
Because you can do that wrong. And that's, again, where we have to praise Carl Weathers as director, because sometimes you can write that scene and it sounds good on a bit of paper, but actually making it work, it's two different things.
Yeah.
It's the way you shoot it. It is the way you shoot it. And it's the timing.
Yep.
And he got that bang on for me. It just touched all the right notes.
Yeah.
So, we then get into the business of things. Obviously, Mando has a wee chat with Kara and Grief, and since it's going to take a little bit of time for repairs to get done, they want a bit of a help with them. They believe that there's one sort of foothold left for the Empire on the planet in Navarro. They think it's a kind of holdover from when they were there before, a pretty much unmanned station. They reckon there's a way to blow it up from the inside, just get rid of it, it'll make Navarro a lot safer overall if there's just no Imperial presence there, and they basically talk Mando into helping them along with it. And they head off, basically, and we get to meet the Mithral for the first time as well, during that scene, or since he was last with in season one anyway. I wasn't sure, even watching it back the second time, is that like a defense thing where he's basically like shat himself when you see that smoke
but
is that like a some bit of Finding Nemo where you see the
the squid
go with the oil?
There's a blue species in the Orville that sprays a blue ink when they're surprised, startled, and one of the lead characters walks in on a significant other with one of these creatures, and when he walks in and they're like, "What the hell?" the blue alien spews blue shit all over the bed sheets, and so I wondered if that was a throwback kind of thing.
It might have been. But you know, just done in a way not to kind of make it too out there, but you know, just enough to kind of get that little laugh and move on.
Pretty
fun. Like.
Funny. Equally funny here in Mando as it was the Orville. So as it's a good joke.
Yes, in a different way, because we have different levels of comedy applied to
these
properties. So, you know, Orville is just that little bit more over the top. Mando's that little bit more serious. So I think, you know, the difference between the two was just the right tone for each, if you like. The Mithral's basically getting dragged into coming along. We find out that he's got a massive, was it 350-year sentence or something like that? That he's got to work for Grief Karga, so he's basically a slave at this point. But, you know, in a way, he's obviously been treated better than he maybe could have been when he was last frozen in carbonite and there was a kind of wanted dead or alive out there for him. Maybe shows a kind of different side to Grief Karga these days. Maybe you feel that in the past he wouldn't have bothered with someone like that. and they head off, obviously, to the base itself. Anything you want to say about else about this point before we get into the kind of action side of things?
No. Everything I think I've got, the rest of my notes are things I see during the
next bit.
The next bit and the okay. Eventual escape. Were there any Clone Wars or Rebel Easter eggs that you noticed or anything? I know there was an IG-11 statue near
that's
the
more a kind of Mando season one Easter egg, I think. Though.
Yeah,
I noticed that, and then I saw it highlighted on kind of Reddit later on as yeah. well. But no, I mean, I always kind of.
Yeah, because I go onto
Reddit,
ones.
I go onto social media, and I talk about the episodes afterwards because it's lightning quick, you know, as
yes.
soon as it's out there, people are starting talking about
3 a.m.
And I haven't seen a lot of things or anything that I didn't notice myself, you know, showed.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things with some of the stuff we'll get into later on, which I noticed myself, and a couple of things I didn't notice myself, which I'll speak about, but we'll get to that when we get to it. So we kind of start off as when they get to the base. There's again, I love the kind of whole comedy between the Mithril not wanting to get out the car and them just winding yeah. them up. Jilly does what they want him to do. Obviously, Mando has to go up, knock off a few troopers, and come and let them in. And they realise that the base is definitely not unmanned. There's clearly some troopers there, some that Mando had to take out. So the idea is get in sneaky, don't let MD know they're there, straight to the kind of power generation device and get it switched off. So they go and they find it, and they, you know, they send the Mithril out to do it. and if he doesn't, you know, he's going to be either walking back, or he's going to get shoved in, or he's not getting any more time off his sentence, whatever they kind of decided to do with him at that point. I forget exactly. And out he goes, and I loved the little bit where he finally goes out and he says, hey, there's not even a guardrail on this, which kind of always annoyed me a bit, like the Death Star thing,
yep.
you know what I mean, in the Empire and A New Hope, that like they had these bits that somebody was supposed to walk out on, they weren't controls, and there was no guardrail. It just seems like the worst design in the world. Like you can imagine the Empire, the Imperial Health and Safety Officers, like, really? You know what I mean? We have to shut down this whole Death Star. This place is a death trap.
I mean,
I don't give a fuck.
Papa Palpatine finds his loyal subjects expendable, but come on now.
I know. There's them just deliberately, you know, people drop them off because they fall into stupid holes. you can just imagine that happening. They could make a whole comedy series just about accidents that happen on badly designed Imperial establishments. But anyway, I like that they made a joke at it.
Yes.
And they kind of they activate it so that they've got a bit of time to get out before the
I gotta say this though, the whole Death Star control tractor beam control setup and even mm-hmm. similar display with you know power uh-huh. levels and what the power level did to the device. Just, you know, as uh-huh. like Obi-Wan's turning down the power level, you actually see the tractor beam's power drops. And here you see mm-hmm. the cooling system drop. A really nice little throwback to
it's part of that world building thing as well. And almost that, you know, it's a pretty standard setup for what you would find in an Imperial facility, you know. So
yeah.
I like things like that. I like, you know, familiarity and that side of things, definitely. It's like a continuity thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Between the series.
It's so stuff Jammer hates and despises.
You know, well, I think that's wrong. I think you're doing him a disservice. He doesn't hate it and despise it. He just doesn't care about it compared to
like
other things.
Messing with him.
Oh, yeah, why not? I love messing with him as well. But obviously, as they're making their way back out, they discover a room. They're having a little look about and they discover a room which they find some things sort of slightly unexpected.
Yep.
And they're looking for more information on what's actually going on here, because they reckon, wait a minute, this is more than just a placeholder left over from when the Empire was here. They were doing something here. And Cara Dune says this is a science facility.
Yep.
And as they explore, they find some what's basically clone type bodies and tanks and
it
things
like
that.
Looks like clone vats.
It does look like clone vats. And I don't know if you noticed, but did you notice the music that's playing during that scene when we see the sort of clone vat things?
No, did you hear
Papa Palpatine's? It's the theme tune. No, it's the Snoke theme tune. It's specifically from Snoke that John Williams did for the sequel trilogy. So a lot of people were then saying, is this, leading towards Snoke? Because why put that music in there? And I've since seen, which I thought looking at the thing in the tank, that looked nothing like Snoke to me. And I thought it was maybe just a little Easter eggy kind of hint rather than a, this is where this is going. But I have seen comparisons online between what's in that tank and then what the Snokes look like in the tank from then. Rise of the Skywalker, film at the end, the shittiest, most recent film, anyway.
Yeah.
And although the Scar is in a different place from the Snoke clones, there is a similarity there.
They might not have it perfected yet, so. Well.
No, but I think what they could be just hitting at there, but without ever getting into it in the Mandalorian story, is that this could have been a precursor to what then was used for Snoke later on, because we're years too early for Snoke yet. I mean, Snoke hasn't appeared on the scene at this point in the story. This is only 5 years after Return of the Jedi, do you know what I mean, at the end of the day. So it's far too early for Snoke. I mean, Ben Solo likely hasn't even been born at this point in the story, given the age he's kind of supposed to be, because it's supposed to be, 30 years after sort of Return of the Jedi, so we're kind of 25 years off for the events at Force Awakens at least, so I feel it's maybe just a little bit too early for Snoke at the moment, but you could certainly see how they could angle into that. It could be used to kind of connect up those events somehow.
Yeah.
Like maybe the work that they're doing shows Palps that although he can't clone himself a new body, he can clone a puppet at this moment in time and still have it be particularly
like
powerful force-wise.
When Mando and company enter into the area, two Imperial officers are purging the drives, and then they say, destroy it. And he takes out a gun and he shoots a display that has a very clear circle on it. I couldn't make out the writing. He shoots it and it causes the screen to stutter, which almost makes it look like the Starkiller base trench on the circle. But I don't think that's it. We do hear
That doesn't seem too much for me, no.
No, I thought maybe though Exegol, because of some of the other stuff that we see, and the fact that the betrayer tells the the imperial officer tells the person that betrays Mando. Uh-huh. That they'll be rewarded in the new future, new era.
She says, yeah.
And I'm wondering if those people are part of the beginning of the Final Order, because like you said, the dealings
it
with
makes
Snoke.
Sense. I mean,
maybe Exegol on that thing
wants to bring back clearly the Empire to me. Yeah, so yeah. It would make sense to me that if there's word gets out about something going on elsewhere, and maybe the potential of Palpatine being back, you can imagine Gideon would be all over that shit.
Yeah.
But
are you
it's probably a little bit too early yet to say.
Yeah, are you going to talk about the hologram guy, or should we?
Oh, absolutely. I think we need to talk about that, and basically what he speaks about, because I think what that does is it shows us that the current plan, if you like, or Gideon's endgame at the moment, it's certainly not to create a Snoke or create a new Emperor or some of the things that we theoried. I think based on what we've heard with volunteers getting mentioned and everything like that, and then what we see at the end, that what he's doing is creating Dark Troopers, an army of sort of potentially Force-sensitive troops in sophisticated armour that are completely loyal to the Empire, that he can kind of send out there to do his bidding. That's what it looks like to me. And not only that, but in the audio descriptive, so you know somebody that's got sight issues, you can put audio description on.
Yes.
And it tells you kind of what's going on at the time. Those troopers at the end are called Dark Troopers in the official audio description.
God damn it, I fucking knew it. God, I was right again.
Yep. I had actually written about that in my column yesterday, that, you know, it was basically like Gideon's endgame revealed. I think this is what he's trying to do. And I'd mentioned that the fans had said Dark Troopers, but this was before somebody had then shown the proof of it using the kind of audio description. So later on that night, last night obviously, because we're recording this a little bit later this week, I had kind of read it, and somebody had posted the evidence showing that, you know, it was up in the audio descriptive as Dark Troopers. So I think that pretty much settles that side of things. That's what's going on.
They're combining...
Whether it's the complete end game or not, I'm not sure of, because I still think, you know, Gideon himself, if it could be done safely, would be quite happy to somehow receive Force powers as well. But
yeah,
I know you
that
were
was
very
a theory
unkeen
you had
on
early
that.
On.
Yeah, you weren't keen on that at all, no. You know what I mean? But I think I get that. But I just don't know. I think that could be where things might move to eventually. But clearly, at the moment, the idea is to create this army of troopers that... And I'm assuming Gideon wants to use these troops to then take back over the galaxy again and re-establish the Empire, potentially with him on the top, unless there's somebody else that he's answering to that we've not seen yet, which is possible, but there doesn't seem any need for that at this moment in time currently.
The cool thing is Dark Troopers existed both in the EU and canon. And
yes, but they were slightly different.
They
were. Both.
And this one is kind of making an amalgam of
agree.
The two.
Yeah. So I forget which one was which, but one of them was droids. I know that. I don't know whether that was the EU or the canon version. I think that was the canon version because it was part of a video game, which was considered canon. And then the EU was more Force-sensitive, you know, side of things, or at least at one point.
Experimentations
anyway, that's how the Dark Troopers were.
Yep.
So, probably a big revealing scene in terms of how things are going, but really when you add it to the final scene of the episode as well, it kind of all comes together, and that's where we're getting obviously this theory and this information from. And I think it's fair to say we've got that one right. But then after they realise what's going on and that Gideon's still alive, they think this place isn't empty.
Oh, wait, we gotta say one thing about Hologram Man. Hologram Man, okay. The Kamino clone trooper, his words prove that at least John Favreau does not like the M word, if not as well, proves that the prequel heavy guy Dave Filoni doesn't like the motherfucking M word, because they managed to use the M word without using the M word.
Yes, but I'm not sure whether that is because they don't like it or they're worried it will turn fans off by going down that route because they know what fans think about it.
Maybe.
Either way, I think you have to play in the playground that you've got. You can't say that the prequels aren't canon anymore. We can't unfortunately even say the sequel trilogy isn't canon anymore. So you just have to make the best of that. And that's all they can do within the canon that they've got. So midichlorians are canon. You know, you just have to accept them now, whether you like it or not.
Why do
but
you
I think
have to say
saying it out
though?
Loud?
Why?
Well, maybe they just call it the M count for anyone. Would you be happier? But you still know what it means. You know
what
the M count is. I mean, I joked with you yesterday when we weren't able to... So Kyle put up a sort of tweet last night saying, look, the canteen is going to be a little late to, because we're having some issues today. And I joked with you should put up saying we're having some issues with the M count. And I was waiting to see your kind of reaction to that, if you remember.
I didn't catch that.
Because
sorry.
I know how much you hate it.
Yeah, but I will.
You know,
say,
you can pretend it's not, but it's midichlorians is what they're talking
about.
Yeah,
but it does go back to the original theory that someone in the Empire is aware that this species is naturally strong in the Force.
Either that or. There was these people that were holding them who we don't know who they are, these weird people that all look the same. When Mando first sort of retrieves the child, shall we say, in the early season one, we don't know what they were doing, but it could have been out there that this child had Force ability. However, considering there is only three of that species we have ever seen in Star Wars canon, two of them were Jedi Masters on the Jedi Council, and the young one we see seems to be really strong with the Force itself. On an evidence basis, you would have to side with the fact that you're correct, that it seems as if that particular species has a particularly strong affinity with the Force. We've not seen any evidence to suggest otherwise. We've only seen positive evidence. So the hypothesis we must make scientifically at this point is that that's the case. Until we see different, you know, so it's an interesting one.
I think
I think would ruin all this for me if we found out point later on that. Would you know what would ruin all this for me?
What's that?
As if we found out later on that the child was some sort of clone of Yoda.
I've said that before.
Just
please
saying
don't.
It right now. Don't do it. No. There's no need for it. There's no need to connect it to Yoda that way. It's really interesting exploring a species we don't know much about. We like the fact that, you know, they're clearly all Force sensitive, but you don't need to connect it to Yoda any more than that. Please, Filoni and Favreau. That's all I'll say on that one. So I think what we'll do is we'll cover the whole action thing as like one moment, or at least up until they get back to Navarro. So what happens is they kind of... Because there's only so much you can say about the action. They start fighting back, obviously. They're getting pinned down. They're worried, or clearly Mando's worried, that the child could be exposed where it is and that Gideon could be looking for them, because clearly, as per Pershing's message, they need to get the child back to continue their experimentation. So because he can move quicker than the rest, he kind of shoots off with his jetpack to go back and get the kid. And that leaves our three, I would like to say, stars of this episode to have to hold the fort, if you like. And we have a whole action scene built around the three of them, and they steal that transport and they escape.
Is that transport anything special? Is it like from one of the rides, Star Tours, or?
Well, if it is, I don't know about it. I don't know.
I wonder.
I'm familiar with
an Easter egg or not.
I've never been to any of these parks or anything like that because I live in shitty old UK and we don't have anything like that. So like, I've never been to Disney World or anything. So, you know, I wouldn't have too much familiarity with that side of things, but there's nothing obvious that I can remember that where I thought, oh, that's one of them, or that's from this era, or anything like that. Which it doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be. Don't get me wrong.
At all.
But, you know, I can understand why you're curious about it, you know. It would be potentially another little Easter egg in there. But they basically steal that and they run off and manage to survive that drop. And they're kind of running away. And obviously what the stormtroopers do is send some bikes after them. And I just want to go back to the kind of whole, what you said about the action shots. Because that whole, the way that was shot about them coming down, but then even more cool looking was when the speeder bikes come out and you see them like from that behind shot as they you know, as they fall down the mountain, if you like, and then the kind of the gravity stuff kicks in on them, and then you see those two troopers kind of clashing with each other.
That was quite realistic.
And then the shot just follows the trooper who was okay. It's almost just like a glance back and pew, he's on.
Off
I just thought that was really well shot, that. And then, of course, it's a natural formation for an action scene to happen. It's like they're in this valley, and it felt a bit like when, you know, almost Indiana Jones at one point, when like Cara Dune's like fucking hitting them into the side of the wall, and that reminded me almost of an Indiana Jones type thing. It was just really well shot. You've got Grief on the kind of cannons shooting them. I thought the scene where the trooper lands on them and is just about to fire, and Karga just gets the target on him, and there's just that, like, again, it's the pause. That's great directing, because he knows to put that pause in where the trooper just looks back rather than just blast them off backwards, because it just adds that little bit of humour where you go, this guy's fucked. And the guy himself has got time to realise, I'm totally fucked here, before he gets blown back. And then, again, it was a great shot, the way he just focuses on one part and you see the kind of the transport go off into the distance and blur out, and then you see the helmet, the kind of smoky helmet, just blow off into the scene. Again,
I love
this
that.
Is why we're talking about why we love the direction of this episode and why we're praising Weathers so much, because there is a technique, there's lots of little things that you can do with it. A story is reliant on the script as well, of course, and the quality of the story behind it. But when you put it in that visual medium, it's the little things that you do to tell that story that sometimes make it spark. And there was loads of that, and loads of little scenes like that in this week's episode. And that's why we are praising Weather's direction so much, I think.
It wasn't like episode two, the passenger, where it was almost completely self-contained with some character growth. This actually pushes the story forward as much as last week's episode.
Does a good job of taking the focus away from Mando and the child a little bit as well, and letting us focus on some of those secondary characters and not suffer for it. You know, it didn't suffer for it. It was an excellent show, and the whole period of time when Mando is away, which is this whole central kind of climactic action scene, Mando is basically away at that point.
Yes.
It's just the three of them, and you don't miss them. And that's testament to how well they put that show together as well, because in that little brief bit of time, they had built a little relationship between those three characters, which you love, and now you've got this connection with them that you maybe didn't. I didn't feel I had in season one. We Cara Dune, Grief Karga, the Mithril was just almost felt like a secondary kind of throwback funny character. He was a foil for Mando more than in season one, but the way they put the three of them together made me care about them at that point. You know what I mean? And that's good direction as well. You know what I mean? Because that's how you decide to put that together.
I agree.
So they kind of get away, but then the Empire sends some TIE fighters after them, which are going to be a little bit more difficult for the guys to deal with, and the gun gets smashed, you know, and Grief Karga just managed to just jump away in time, and they get back to Navarro, so it's like, hey, we're back to safety, but there's still these TIE fighters after them, and they're coming in to shoot, and of course that's when Mando makes his entrance in the Razor Crest. He's got the ship, it's been fixed, he's back up and running, he blows up one of them, and then we kind of see a bit of fancy flying as he takes out the other two. And we already talked about this at the start, I didn't say I liked it as well, but I did. I loved that whole, the way that was shot, you know, the Razor Crest taking out the two TIE fighters was really well done again. The little close-up shots, as you said, the way that they kind of put you in the action, and the Yoda just there for the kind of the little baby Yoda stuff for the comedy relief, of where he's just still eating his cookies and he's like, "Woo, this is a good fun." And then of course he's sick at the end of it as well, which just totally, you know, for any parent, you just think that's what you get for eating too many cookies, baby Yoda.
I thought that was so fun.
Yeah, it's just that was such a nice shot, you know what I mean? Because a nice little touch, because he'd basically been in a roller coaster, hadn't he? You know, it's like eating sweets before you go on a roller coaster. It's not a good idea for kids. And that's it. And we don't really see much more of the kind of three other ones because there's no time for that. Mando's already in his ship, it's fixed. They kind of call it quits in terms of what he owes them. Because he's helped them out, obviously, saved their lives again. Mando's going to head off to his real target now. But we've still got a good sort of 3 or 4 minutes of the episode left after this. And this is when we kind of touch more on the scene with the cloning and what was going on with Pershing's hologram video and everything like that. And we actually see that we're on an Imperial vessel. It looks like one from the Clone Wars, would you agree? One of the kind of Clone Wars.
It kind of looks like the Vindicator class, I think it's called.
Yeah, definitely kind of older, I think,
it's
anyway.
It's different. It's
more like the ones that they use in the Clone Wars than it is an actual Imperial Star Destroyer for the Civil War era, anyway.
It's whether not it's even like a First version. Order or Final Order one.
No,
so,
it's not.
Like,
no. This again, is, I think we're too early
He's dealing with whatever he can get at the moment, trying to help get the First Order and Final Order off the ground, likely.
Yeah.
One of those two.
So he's in this ship, obviously, and we see one of his staff, don't know what rank she is, but she's speaking to someone who's clearly put a tracker on Mando's ship. The guy that was working for Greef Karga, obviously, you know, Gideon, you're imagining as a smart, intelligent villain. He's possibly thought, well, there may be at some point Mando comes back here. So if that happens, here's some money, basically. Please stick a tracker on his ship if you ever see him come back. And it just so happens that that's what's happened in this occasion. So he puts the tracker on so the Empire, if you like, under control again. Gideon can now track and see where Mando's going. And we know where he's going next. He's going to find Ahsoka. And we now know, or we think we know anyway, that the title of next week's episode, I don't know if you've seen this yet, Kyle, is called The Jedi.
The Jedi.
The people who revealed that have got every episode title right so far this season, so there's no reason to doubt them, and it makes completely sense, because we've said many times before, Dave Filoni both wrote and directed this episode.
This is where,
you know, we're
going to
see.
Shows up.
And you know what's great as well? I just want to pick up before we get into that whole ending scene a little bit more in case there's anything you want to see, say about it. I just wanted to say what's really cool is that's us. We haven't seen any more footage for these final few episodes. That was everything that was in the trailers we have now seen across that first four episodes. I wonder, do you think they'll maybe do a trailer? Like a mid-season, here's what's coming next trailer at some point, because we had heard for the guys at KRT who, you know, have been getting a lot. We've spoke to them in the back channels, and we kind of trust those guys. Like us, they won't get absolutely everything right, because not everything that we hear sometimes comes to fruition. But
sometimes it changes
after we've heard about it. Which is my worry at the moment with the whole Cara Dune Bo-Katan thing. I've got a feeling maybe there was an idea for that, but it's not went anywhere. But I don't know. We'll wait and see on that one. But they did say that they were 100% sure that there was like a teaser of some time type filmed where it was Ahsoka just taking some people on, and it was done like as a promo. And I do wonder if there's a chance that could pop up maybe. It may have been just an additional scene they wanted to shoot for the show. I don't know for certain. There's no guarantee either way, no doubt. But I just have a funny feeling that there could be maybe another promo to sort of promote the second half of the season. I have to say, I hope not. I like the fact that we're four episodes in and that we've seen everything so far, and we don't know what happens next. You know,
I don't think they want to show her until it's time, because we always get a little teaser of sorts, you know, 25 seconds or something, it seems, of each episode, like Thursday or whatever, whatever. And I don't see them showing her. This is something millions of fans, not me, because, you know, I mean, I'm excited because I'm enjoying the season.
Yes, but you're not a big Ahsoka fan because familiarity with the character.
Exactly. But millions of fans do, and they are, like...
Well, I must admit, I didn't, like, when that... Remember that initial Clone Wars movie that they made?
Yes.
And they... That was fucking rotten, and an idea Garden. Anakin having an apprentice and all that, it just didn't work for me. I was not behind it at all. But I must admit that I changed my mind over the course of both the Clone Wars and Rebels on that front. There you go. So yeah, definitely interested to see what happened next. So just on that final scene, which is basically Mando's getting tracked, she tells Gideon, and we see those kind of, which are now confirmed to be Dark Troopers, which appear to be whatever, where the experimentation is going. Although I'm guessing they're not ready yet, given the fact that... you know, the tests haven't exactly all been successful at the moment. And you want to say about that kind of finale there, Kel, before?
Not really. Death, yeah, the dark troopers from the Dark Forces game. That's awesome. I like seeing that. Gideon, like I said, he's obviously either, I don't know if he's on part of the First Order or part of the Final Order, but he's there's also a third option. He might be on his own.
He might be just trying to build everything back on his own and be the main man, you know, the you know. So it could be that that's the reason he's building this army, is to fight back in a military sense against the New Republic. Although it kind of feels like doesn't quite have the might for that yet, considering how mobilized the New Republic would still be at the point, five years behind. You know, it's not as if the New Republic's just abandoned all their ships and troops or anything like that. So,
and the New Republic does play a bit in the very, very last part of this
show, which I did miss, which was kind of a bit of Cara Dune character development as well. You know, the guy trying to say, hey, there's still a fight out here to have, and somebody like you could be really useful in that fight. And she's like, but you can see that she's thinking twice about things a little bit, you know.
Yeah, after he mentions Alderaan and leaves the service medal or service coin on the table. I thought that actually alluded a little bit to who the Cara Dune showing.
It's possible.
Her carrying that scene showing that she's got a we already knew she had a past as a rebel shock trooper, but he mentions her record, like that she's something they need. So you can do Cara Dune either way, Cara in the present or future, or go back to her rebel days, her rebel shock trooper days. Either way, I thought it was a possible tease at that.
Yeah, it could be. It could be again. It's kind of, although we're the ones that started the as Cara Dune show rumor, then KRT added on the kind of Bo-Katan stuff. I did see this week that Katie Sackhoff was asked about it, and she said she genuinely didn't have any idea what, you know, I think it was Deadline that spoke to her, that she had no idea at all what they were talking about in terms of that, and it does make you think, But I know actors that are on NDAs, I mean, prior to last week, she couldn't even admit she was in The Mandalorian, you know, so, you know, you just don't know how kind of tight they're keeping these things, but I just have a feeling in the background, I wonder whether they'll maybe get cold feet on it. Especially which I don't get at the moment, but I don't want to get into the politics of it because I'm too ignorant to be able to kind of to jump into this. But I know she's getting a lot of flack on social media at the moment, Gina Carano, and there's this campaign Sack Gina Carano going on, which for the outside to me looks like complete nonsense. You know,
it is.
But again, I'm not familiar enough with the subject to comment.
It is literally exactly the stereotype that you hear of in Hollywood, where she's not towing the line the politically, and therefore she's in trouble. It was just like when Taylor Swift
doesn't seem as like I got the James Gunn thing, for example, right? I got, even then I was like, nah, this is too much, but I got it. I don't get it with her. I don't, for what I've seen,
she's
I don't
not
see
saying anything.
She's just almost saying
but
nothing.
You gotta,
I don't want to get involved. You know?
Yes, you gotta remember that that's what I was getting at is our media and our celebrities hounded Taylor Swift to put her thumb on the election because she hadn't said anything. She had stayed out of politics almost her entire career, and people started like threatening to boycott her because she doesn't want to come out because she's really a Trump supporter.
But that then forces somebody because they think, well, I either lose my fan base, which is my income, or I just tell lies and say I'm on this side. They might just tell you lies, you know, because you don't know who somebody's voting for in a booth. They could say, oh, yeah, and then go and vote whatever the hell they want, you know,
exactly.
Without you knowing about it. I mean, my dad always said to me, you know, when we were growing up, he would never tell me who he voted for because he didn't want to influence my decisions. He wanted me to kind of decide that for myself when I grew up. But you know, it's just that kind of side of things. You can keep that absolutely private if you want to. So I don't get it. But again, I don't want to get into, you know, especially being an outsider to American culture. I don't want to kind of stick my big toe in it and trouble myself. I'll say
you're looking free to at do it so. As, as logically as I can, just at what she has tweeted, the words that she has put on screen, I don't. All I see is someone expressing political dissent with the alleged president-elect. And the only reason I say alleged is because our electors don't vote until like December 8th, and there are court cases. So until the court cases are settled, you have to use words like alleged and stuff, but regardless, like she's
again
fine.
To get back to kind of Gina, my worry is that because you know how sensitive Disney get about this stuff, that might have been something that's given them some cold feet.
I don't think they will with this. I really don't because, dude, her character is great. She's killing it.
Could she carry a show? Do you think? Because she's not.
No, by herself.
Actor.
Hell no.
I don't think so. But
by
I
herself,
think she could
no.
carry it with someone a bit more experienced, Sackhoff.
Exactly. And I'm down with that.
We'll wait and see
to
what happens.
To the extent that I'm down to see what
happens.
Yeah.
So next week, what happens, Kel?
Next week, I almost wonder if we're gonna go to two planets to get to Ahsoka. There's rumors I saw. I don't know if it's been confirmed since I slept, but the runtime for episode 5 is 58 minutes.
I have heard the rumors. I haven't seen enough.
Yeah,
solid evidence myself. Like I've seen something, but I don't think looking at it, it doesn't tell me that's 100% bang on.
Right,
but I think
we
might get. I think there's a good chance it could be, and I think we might find it before the end of this week. You know that it's a longer episode because so far we've got the run times beforehand.
Yeah, I'm guessing this is at least 53 to 55 minutes.
Yeah,
episode I'm expecting.
So could it be a lot that happens.
And I think we might go to two planets. I don't have a specific reason why. I just think I really think they want to hold Ahsoka like hold that and anticipation
until like the
as
very
long
end
as they
of
can.
The episode.
She's going to find them or she will locate them before they locate her. However, I'm making a guess that her and Mando will have a confrontation, and that I'm going to get real specific on how I think it's going to happen. Mando's going to have the child. Child's going to detect Ahsoka. Mando's going to see something's up with the child. He's going to turn around, take a shot, and we'll hear that snap hiss, and the silver blade of Ahsoka Tano will be there. Yep. I really do. I think that's how it'll happen.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm not sure about the halfway through thing, because I've got a funny feeling that next week we could see quite a little bit of exposition, and that's why I think there might be a little bit of time for just some quiet reflection and talking between Ahsoka and Mando by the time he finally kind of meets up with her, distrustful. Should they talk about the chair? We might get a little bit of information, and then I think Gideon's going to turn up, but I don't think that will get resolved. But I've just got a funny feeling, considering this is episode 4, and then like the last 3 5. Episodes, it will be episode 5, yeah.
Yes.
But
yeah.
We'll then have 6, 7, and 8 to go, so 3 episodes left to finish. And when you look at last season, it was like the last 3 were almost like the climax kind of thing, weren't they? Well, maybe not 6 so much, but 7 and 8 definitely were as well. I'm wondering whether Gideon gets the child back and it becomes a kind of rescue type situation maybe towards the end of this season, so that we can have
a proper confrontation
between Gideon and some of these characters, because Esposito talked about fighting Mando and using his darksaber. So I don't see that happening next week, for example. Do you know what I mean? Especially if Ahsoka's there as well. And I don't know how Ahsoka's going to react, because given how things went for her in Rebels later, she doesn't see herself as a Jedi. She left the Jedi Order. She doesn't therefore feel some responsibility to be like a Jedi and fix everybody's problems.
Right.
But somehow ends up kind of doing it as well. But she might not be that willing to kind of put herself on the firing line to protect this kid. I don't know. It's funny. I'm not sure how Ahsoka's going to kind of react to all this and get involved. So that'll be interesting to see, like, how she's kind of matured a little bit since we last saw her, which really, since we properly saw her in Rebels, is like 10, 12 years, something like that, you know what I mean? It's not a short space of time. And then when we saw her post-Return of the Jedi at the end, she looked a bit different, but we didn't really get to spend much time with her, so we don't really know how her character's changed. All we knew is she was going to go looking for Ezra. That's it, and that she buggered off with Sabine. And really, so it'll be interesting to see just how this version of Ahsoka is slightly, you know, different and how she reacts to all this situation. So I'm not sure, but I'm guessing that, they have to create some drama and some tension in the rest of the series. I thought it might be a good idea if somehow they're defeated and Gideon manages to get away with the kid again. And then it becomes a kind of race against time to try and get the kid back before they can do any kind of permanent damage to it.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I can see that happening. And then, like I said, I have a feeling, I would say a 65% chance Ahsoka takes the child at the end of this season. I do. I still think that's a real likelihood.
What would that give Mando to do in season? Then to do that, he would need to have some other goal, some other party's development.
Well, that's the whole thing. It frees him up to where we don't even have to know what the next adventure is yet. It frees him up to do
anything.
So
it's almost like
anything.
That's a 2-season arc and it's finished.
Yeah.
And then what happens to that character next? I'm with you. Yeah, I can see how that could work. It's certainly a trope that's been done in TV many times before, you know, of a season arc, a couple of season arcs, take the story in a different direction, so it could happen. I don't know. I think I wouldn't like to say that until we see how this one ends, you know. I think it could go so many different ways at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just not sure, but I could totally see that happening. Yeah.
They've shown us, again, this episode has shown us once again, a lot of theories, fan theories, and some rumors, again, were right, and I'm just, you know, I'm blown away by everything that happened to the point to where I actually want to watch this episode again, like, right now.
Have you watched it once or twice so far?
Just the one time. All right.
I've watched it twice so far.
Yeah, that's it. I think we might see two planet hits, Ahsoka somewhere around the middle, and a showdown of sorts between her and Mando. I think next Friday we see lightsaber for certain. How does that make you feel? We're gonna see a lightsaber and a trained Force user in Mandalorian.
So I'm not Nick that's like, oh, I hate the Jedi now. I don't want to see the Force in Star Wars anymore. I'm sick of all that. Star Wars is part of that. It's a fan. Star Wars is hearts, not sci-fi. It's fantasy. It's just sci-fi fantasy. And for sci-fi fantasy, you need magic powers and wizards. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Jedi are. So it's an integral part of Star Wars. So I'm always happy to see Jedi kicking some ass. You know, it's cool. It almost represents what Star Wars is to me. Although I've loved what Mando's done irrespective of that so far. But you've got the child part of it as well. So, you know, if they weren't wanting to get anything involved with the Force or the Jedi at all, they wouldn't have created the character of the child, would they? Do you know what I mean?
So, no.
That's clearly not the way things are going. Okay, so that's where we think things are going next week. It'll be a big one next week for sure. So tune in and find out what Kyle and I thought of next week's episode, which we think is called The Jedi. And we're certainly going to know a lot more by this time next week, aren't we?
Yep.
Thanks very much for listening, folks. Kyle, any last words?
Just make sure you guys are checking out LRM on online.com every day. YouTube channel, subscribe to that, and of course my other show LR Mornings every Monday through Friday. Usually hits right around 10:30, 11 a.m. Eastern time, and you can find me at that Kyle Malone on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks.
Great. Okay, thanks everybody for listening. See you next week. Bye.